What is going on, everybody? Shadows dancing in the moonlight. Pussy's already jumped up here.
Pussy's starting early, man. Can't got to control it.
Welcome, everybody.
Whip it.
The Cruel Summer Slashback, week two from 2026. Man, doesn't 2026 feel like a year in the future, though? Like it's, I'm like, because in my mind, it should still be like at the latest, like 2003, 2004. But no.
I don't know about a year in the future, but it certainly feels like it sucks. God, ain't nothing going on. Much bullshit all the time.
People whining, bitching, moaning. People need to grow up, buddy. Start being more positive, like Dead Pit. We're working on our book right now, Positively Pit. And that's it's right. Going to motivate people to be more positive in their day to day lives.
Chapter one is shut up. Chapter two is grow up. Chapter three is get up. It's just, it's all motivational.
Yeah. Chapter seven is shit your pants and then do a little dance.
Khaki pants.
Yeah. Black Peter's in here, Uncle Bill. You love him. We're going to start with the movies here shortly because we've got some good ones. Some more 80s slashers that have a lot of, if you notice when we do these movies, we pick them at random, but sometimes they end up having quite a bit in common with one another from week to week, no matter how random we do. But specialty show for next week, we handpicked these, and we're going to talk about those at the end of the show for week three. It's the turd of the show, the turd show.
Yeah, I have a feeling
slashback next week.
Like a certain element of people will enjoy this next theme because it's not for everybody. Just like us, we're not for everybody. That's all right.
Yeah, we're not for everybody. But kind of a three-day weekend for me, Uncle Bill, although tomorrow is not going to be very enjoyable. I was telling you. It's probably started about a month ago. I started having extremely sharp pains in one of my teeth back here. I thought it was my back tooth because that one's almost bionic. It's almost a bionic tooth. Like it's all like, what is that shit? What do they call that? The silver filling stuff, right? It looks like the endoskeleton.
Yeah.
But it's the tooth in front of it, which has no fillings. But there's a cavity under the fucking gum. Okay. And I was mad because this woman was like, do you dip? God damn it. I dip Oreo cookies. God damn it. In milk. That's what I was thinking. But no. So they're going to try one of those high tech, highfalutin root candles tomorrow. So everybody lift me up in your prayers and everything. And hopefully they numbered enough to where I don't even know I'm in the building. And,
I remember the only thing I remember about root candles is Garrett telling that story about how he got one and he was just laying there like all happy and shit. It never bothered him at all. But like almost every other story I've heard about a root candle was that it was not great. So,
well, I hear anymore they've perfected the candle to where it's about like getting a cavity filled nowadays. We'll see. They may not even, my dentist said they may not even attempt it because it's under the gum. And if not, I will lose one of my digits or one of my teethers. So I'll be whistling more when I talk.
That'd be fucking killer if that happened, because then you'd be all
you won't be able to see it. Yeah, you won't be able to see it. It'll be back in the back there, but I don't know. Yeah, I'll be living the gimmick. Matter of fact, I don't give a fuck what they do. It's been aggravating me so much. Just get it, fix it, get rid of it, do whatever, numb me up so I don't feel nothing. But yeah, I'm getting mentally prepared for the canal tomorrow, about 2:45. Well, anyway. That's my story.
Most people are saying it's not that bad.
Okay. But this is going to be a fun show tonight. Last thing I'm really looking forward to, other than, you know, I can sleep in a little bit. Like I said, I don't have to be there until in the evening time tomorrow, so I could do that. But we're going to talk some slasher movies tonight. Right? Cruel Summer Slashback. For those that don't know, we've done this show for, it's the third straight year we've done it. This is like our summer book club. And if anybody wants to check the old shows out, they're all up still. There's podcast versions up as well. From, I think most of the podcast versions are still up. And on the Patreon page, we have commercial free playlists. Like, everybody hates those commercials. But if you're a member of the Patreon page, $5 tier and above, fuck the commercials. You don't have them. You can go on there, play straight through all, what would it be, 22 episodes?
Or sure. No? 25.
How many episodes? I don't know. Yeah, 20 some odd episodes. And go breeze right through them.
Breeze through it.
You want to do a little bit of a roll call, see who all's in here tonight? Although I think I started a little bit. But
Greg G just signed up.
Thank you, Greg. Yeah, a lot of people are going with Girls Night Out. We do have a poll up as well. If anybody wants to vote, the best film of the night, Girls Night Out versus Splatter University. And that's why we tell you a week ahead of time, so you guys can watch and comment on the movies with us by the time that next week show rolls around. See, we're thinking of you guys. Falls Rotten's in here. Matthew Hara, Robot 666 House. He was kind of complaining because, dude, like, I don't know if you're new here, but we're always a little bit late. Have we ever started exactly on right on time? I don't think so.
No.
Nubbin.
I was thinking, though, I swear I thought I had Splatter University. It's like a Vinegar Syndrome release, but I don't own that movie. I don't think I own it in anything.
I have the DVD. Thank you, Daltonio. The mayor is in here. He's looking forward to Week Tree. Yeah. Immortal Nightmare had a root canal. Hopefully. Yeah, we got wooden dentures here in Eastern Kentucky. That'd be killer. What do, like, I was thinking about this the other day because I was listening to something they were talking about. I watch a lot of food channels and stuff, like people cooking and everything. And they were talking about like presidential meals. And George Washington did have wooden teeth, right? Wasn't that the gimmick?
Like, didn't they say he had? Okay. So they said he had wooden teeth, but he actually, this is really fucked up. I don't say this, but like, I think his teeth were made out of like a combination of horse teeth and slave teeth.
Now that's messed up. That's even worse. I'd rather have wood teeth than have a fucking horse's or other people's I mean, other people's teeth would be bad, but a horse's tooth would be even worse.
Yeah. Right. Just a bunch. I think lead too. Like, another, they were like, he had lead in his mouth the whole time as well.
Yeah. Who had wooden teeth then?
It was supposed to be Washington. That's what I'm saying. That was kind of like an urban legend or a myth or whatever. Because they've actually got his teeth on display at his house. Still, like, you can tour and, like, you can see his fucking teeth. And they tell you about
him. What a fucking...
Yeah.
Man, say George Washington's teeth. That makes it even worse, though. They buried the poor motherfucker. He's looking like a little slack jaw Eastern Kentucky. Yep. Thaddeus Toofers. But I was wondering, what do wooden, do they like stain them white or something like that? Or what do they look like? Are they just like cherry wood color? Or what?
Yeah, I have no idea.
I don't know.
That'd be hilarious as hell, though, to like try to pass that off like real teeth. You'd have to take some white out and just.
Right. They could, I guess they could paint it, but it would chip pretty easily back in those days, you would think.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. Maybe they had some high tech stuff they were doing to the wood back then that made them where they were like tougher or something. I don't know. I don't know how you would eat with wooden teeth. Did they nail it to your fucking like jaw or something or what? I don't know.
Right in your jaw, son.
Stick it in your jaw.
Put that food in your jaw. Chew it with your gum.
All right. So we're going to go ahead and get this party started up in here, man. We appreciate everybody joining us. And we're going to kick it off. We do these by the year they were released, because this is a little bit of a tricky one. And we'll tell you about it while we talk about the movies. But this one is a slasher movie that I had never seen up until the Arrow Video release, which I've got great artwork on that. You know, fantastic job on that release. Uncle Bill's got the alternate title in the UK. It was known as what?
The Scaremaker.
That's totally a USWA Undertaker ripoff name. That's what it reminds me of.
I like this cover, though. I really do like this cover a lot. But yeah.
So yeah, this one, I think it had a small DVD run, but it was from some like studio that, what was the studio? Guilty Pleasures in 2005. I'd never heard of that company before. So I never did get that, but Arrow Video, they were on a little run of independent like slasher movies there, like I think 3 or 4 years ago. And this was among those. And I had always heard people talk about this movie because it is, the killer is a fucking guy in a bear suit, which is hilarious. But yep. We haven't talked about this movie together in any great detail. So of course, this is a perfect opportunity to do that. We'll talk about Girls Night Out. This one, directed by Robert Dubelle, is set in a fictional Devitt University, and it follows basketball team, cheerleaders, and there is also, you see him right there, at the nearby asylum, local, I don't know, famed serial killer, Dickie Cavanaugh, Uncle Bill.
Old Dickie.
Do you know about Dickie Cavanaugh?
Everybody knows the legend of Dickie Cavanaugh.
So he hangs himself, offs himself possibly, I don't know, and all this coincides with a costume party, of course. You got to have that. If it's a slasher movie, you've got to have a costume party. And an all-night scavenger hunt that the college puts on with the you know, radio station, and they're playing a night-long run of Lovin' Spoonful songs and the Ohio Express number. That's one of your favorites. Yummy, yummy, yummy. I've got love in my tummy, Uncle Bill. And that would totally mean something else in 2026 than it did in like the 60s.
Yeah. That's true. There's way too much Love and Spoonful in this fucking movie, though. They're like all over the soundtrack. I think every song they ever had's on here.
Right. I don't know if they were like one of the producers for Girls Night Out or how that worked, but Hal Holbrook, you see him there. He's in this movie, kind of just in one, you know, one office area. I don't think they film him much with the other cast. I think he was on, they had him for a couple of days.
Yeah.
And who else is in this? Julia Montgomery, who you'd remember. And this was aggravating me to death, so I had to look it up. She was Betty in Revenge of the Nerds. But this came out right around the same time or maybe a couple of years before.
There's Laura Marie Taylor, too, who was in Friday 2, I think right before this movie.
Right. Yeah, everybody loves her. We interviewed her a while back. But, yeah, I mean, it's basically like a stalk and slash movie. Get up to the scavenger hunt. It's a perfect setup. And the killer, there you go. There you see it. In the bear suit with a custom claw made out of steak knives, which is a pretty fun concept. And you got to remember, this was 1982. So this also predated A Nightmare on Elm Street, right? So this was the first time anyone had used a claw as the weapon.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really like not really a claw, though. I mean, it is, but it's like a bunch of steak knives or something. It's not like...
It's a bear paw. You
know, supposed to be a bear paw, but like the knives are all kind of like, they look like steak knives or jagged. They're not like their traditional claw you would think of, I guess. The bear suit is actually a fucking mascot suit too, by the way, which is really, really interesting because like much of the same way that, you know, Jason would go to steal the mask and whatnot, kind of the same thing happens with this guy in the bear suit. Like, he's just like, and he talks. The killer in this talks, by the way. They talk. So there's a scene where the killer's like, I'm going to need this more than you. And, like, takes the bear suit. Fuck.
Yeah, but this does have that early 80s slasher feel to it throughout. The thing that makes it a little bit different is I like the radio station vibe to it. They go back and forth with the, but man, like they did get some, why did they get songs from the fucking 60s? Like they're all from like 1965, 1966. Could they not get, even if it was, okay, I understand people know, Do You Believe in Magic, right? People know that song.
Yeah.
But it's like, if it was set in the 60s. Why is it in this movie?
Yeah,
and why then Summer in the City. So there's songs that people know, but they just don't really fit with. I mean, I was asking you, is this supposed to be set in the 60s? I don't know.
I honestly don't know, man. Maybe, but I don't know. Because all the songs in the movie are from the 60s, it seems like. And it's got one of the worst radio DJs of all time. He's like completely terrible. He just basically says the name of the song twice, and that's his, you know, DJ move. The rest of it's just him kind of like talking about shit. Yeah. And so I don't know when this movie is set.
Yeah, I don't think they say. The scavenger hunt concept was actually a pretty cool. I don't think that they really even touched on the scavenger hunt thing for more than one or two scenes, though.
No.
So they could have made that almost. I think the original title for this movie was Blood Games. So that's making me wonder, was there other scenes involved in the scavenger hunt that they just ended up not doing? So they felt the need to change the name. I think there's multiple names for this movie. And then the director of this, Robert Dubell, I don't know of him really doing much else. I don't know if you looked into it, but that name didn't ring a bell for me.
No, I mean, not me either. There's not very many people in this movie except for Hal Holbrook and maybe Hal Holbrook, Laura Marie Taylor, and Julie Montgomery that I ever really recognized from. I thought it was a Canadian movie at first because it looks like a Canadian movie, and it's not, apparently. It's like it was made in New York, but it just has that same look, man. I was convinced that's what it was.
And something else that's fun about this too, and we'll touch on it with Splatter University as well. And this was just the advertising in the 80s, man. So a lot of the girls that are in the cover art and the artwork used for this movie are not in the movie itself.
Yep.
I think including this girl too. I don't think that any of them are actually, and that's, I think that's the original artwork.
They just put her on there. Like, she's not in the movie. Don't worry about it.
And that happened a lot in this time frame too. But I think that Arrow did a fantastic job. Now this shot here is kind of in the movie. I think that that's supposed to be Lauren Marie Taylor there, right?
Listen, to me, the best part of this whole movie, because it is a pretty slow movie, and like nothing really happens up until the very end, but like the best part of the movie is the fact that that fucking guy talks, that bear talks. So whenever he's killing somebody, and I'm not exaggerating, in that scene in particular, he's like, "You whore, you deserve it, slut, whore." Like, this is killer.
Something else too, if you go back and listen to that voice, because there is kind of like a surprise twist at the end, but you can kind of tell, and we've got to talk about that. So if anybody hadn't seen it, you might want to turn the show off when we get there. We'll give you a warning, but you can kind of tell that it was a woman in the voice. Couldn't you?
I went looking for a woman. I didn't find no woman. That's a very old David Schultz promo. I for some reason I knew that was going to be like what happened.
I forgot who the killer was, but after I heard the voice, I was like, oh yeah. Cause I'd seen this only like one or two other times before.
I was just going to say, there's a lot of bullshit in this movie though, man, as there is in like the other one too, but just a lot of stuff that seems to be there just to like fill up time. There's a bunch of different things that don't go anywhere. Like they're on a basketball team, like the worst basketball team in the world, and like everybody's white and it's just awful.
Did you notice how many people they had at that basketball game too? When did they film that at like a real game or something?
Probably. They probably just like, all right, at halftime, we're going to give you all like 10 minutes to film this with this crowd. Like go out there, act like you know what's going on.
How did that? Yeah. Cause that was like a big crowd of people at that game. It looked like a real game too.
Yeah.
There's one scene that I had to mention on here though, that was like, cause I remember it from watching it before and just cracking up. Like there's a sex scene in this kind of, and then they're just laying around in bed afterwards. And this guy just randomly cracks a fucking fart and they both start laughing. I'm like, I mean, I would definitely laugh in that situation, but I don't know of another woman that would. They would probably be pissed off.
Did you
like, know? Oh, you're just farting, you dummy.
It worked in that scene, but they were trying so hard to make like a lot of these guys, I don't know, goofy, like goofball kind of humor and stuff all throughout this movie. And it never really like works. It's just they're all these different kind of like characters that you can't really tell them apart, but they're like all trying to be super silly and I don't know, I'm not sure what exactly.
Character development in this is not so good. There's a lot of vanilla whoas throughout.
Yeah, it's to a point where you really can't tell like who's who. You can't tell like which, you know, female cast member's which and like who the male, like no, you don't even care really. Which is interesting if you think about it, because in almost every Friday the 13th movie, because people talk about how all the characters in those movies are expendable, but I can remember at least like the majority of them and like what their character kind of was. And in this movie, it's like, there's no way, man, I could tell you like a single character in this movie other than like two. And that would, you know what I mean? That'd be stretching it. Like what their motivation was, what they were doing or what the point was. Like no idea.
Yeah, I always enjoyed this movie, though, just because, like, it's that of that era, like 1981, 1982 slasher movies to me. And, you know, 1982, like, I think 81 was the biggest year for slashers. So by 82, people were still loving them and everything, but like the bloom was starting to wear off on them a little bit. So they had issues getting this out there. I don't think it was that well known of a movie, really. It's still not. But back in the day, like I think Thorny and I did the videotape. I never remember seeing the videotape back
in the day. I don't think it did very well. Like, I really don't think that the release or anything did well of this movie. It didn't really go anywhere. And like you said, like even on home video, I don't think most people knew about it. I didn't know about it until, you know, much, much later on.
Yeah. I think up until that Arrow release, it was pretty much in total obscurity. Like, I didn't know the Guilty Pleasures line that did the DVD, because I did look it up, and there was a DVD that came out in like 2004, 2005, but I never heard anybody mention it. So, it's a lot easier to find now. Arrow released both versions, the Scaremaker version, which Uncle Bill's got, and the Girls Night Out cover right there. And Arrow was doing a lot of interesting, like, regional slashers around this time. I think a lot of companies were. They were trying to crank them out quickly, and I don't know if there's too many left. But Girls Night Out, man, like, I enjoyed it. I had fun with it. Is it a good movie? For a lot of people, they wouldn't say that. I couldn't be honest and tell you that it's a good movie, but for slasher movies of that era, I enjoyed it. I could watch it again.
Here's the thing with it to me. It's very slow. It's saved by, to me, the fact that there's a fucking bear, like a the gimmick is that there's a bear with, you know, serrated fingers. That saves, and the fact that it talks. If it didn't have those two things, I would probably like zone the fuck out of this.
And the fart scene and the loving spoonful.
Once you get to the end where like stuff is actually happening, like it's pretty entertaining at that point. Like when the bear actually shows up and starts doing its bear work. But before that, it's just
bear with us through this movie.
Bear with it.
It did need more bear and farts. And they should have played Do You Believe in Magic at least one more time in it. Three times wasn't enough.
You mentioned though Hal Holbrook too, and there's a funny story as I was reading about it. Like, so Hal Holbrook only took this movie because like he put his kid in there. I don't know if you noticed that or not, but like his boy, I think his name's like fucking David Holbrook.
Hal Jr.
Yeah, let me see. Yeah, David Holbrook is in the film, and that's the only reason Hal Holbrook.
I think he lives across the street from me now.
Yeah, he probably does.
A Holbrook got a neighbor family. Named David Holbrook.
Boyd Holbrook's is.
That's his nephew. Uncle.
So I don't know what I would say, but there's a lot of people in here that are talking about the Nightmare on Elm Street similarities. Mm-hmm. Okay. Other than the fact that the bear talks, which is like, I guess like a Freddy trap, and has the finger knives, whatever, what are the other Nightmare on Elm Street similarities?
Well, I was just going to say the claw. I mean, to me, like that was because that came out a couple of years before the movie. Was there other ones?
That's what I'm saying. Like, I mean, for some reason, I did kind of get a weird Nightmare on Elm Street vibe from this movie. In the sequence, at least the sequences where like there's actually like, you know, the death scenes. But I don't know if it was the glove or if it was the way it was shot, or I'm not entirely sure.
Wouldn't it be interesting if Wes Craven saw this movie and got the idea for the Freddy glove from this movie?
That's what a lot of people in here kind of like saying. I don't know though, but
I mean, it's a little bit different, but not that much different because he is using knives for fingers, right?
Right.
I mean, even though Bear just has paw, it doesn't have a finger.
I'll put it to you this way. I think there's a much greater chance that John Carpenter ripped off Black Christmas than there is that Wes Craven ripped off Girls Night Out.
I don't know. We should have looked up what kind of theatrical run it had, but there's probably not a record of much. And this was one of those movies too that's they sourced this from 35 millimeter film prints. So the original camera negatives and the interpositives and all that's gone. And I think that they did a fantastic job with this. It looked really good. Now it did look a little bit more like a film print. It was a little dirtier or whatever, but for an 80s slasher movie, man, to me that works. I like that. But, also we got to talk about the ending. And
well, if you haven't watched this movie and you don't want to know, you know, the ending or whatever, now is your time to get the fuck out of here.
Just pause it for a couple of minutes and we'll be done. So Dickie Cavanaugh is the local legend that's went crazy. He kills himself in an insane asylum that he's been locked in for a few years. And then his body is stolen. Or we get the impression it is, or is it, did he come back from the grave? The way that they edit it, they didn't really let you know clearly enough. But as the movie goes on, there's this character that works in the diner that lo and behold ends up being Dickie's twin sister. And she is the one, what's the actress's name? Ratanya Alda, who's done all kinds of shit. Some of the actresses in this have done a lot of work. Like, I think she did a bunch of other horror movies, from what I looked up. But she ends up being the twin sister, and it's almost like she is, I don't know if she's mentally ill, or they're saying that she was really possessed by Dickie at the end, and they're trying to tell her,
Spirit of Dickie.
The spirit, Dickie is inside her, right? But, and then the closing scene, and this is great too, where she says, Dickie's still alive. He's been watching the whole time or something. And she opens up like a freezer, and there is Ratanya Alda dressed as a man smiling. And that's the end of the movie.
Which, you know, is killer.
I thought it was pretty interesting too. Yeah. They had, cause they were twins and they dressed her up like a dude. And so Dickie Cavanaugh saw it all.
I love the fact that every slasher movie this time period has like a fucking crazy ending. Like they had to come up with something just absolutely insane at that point to put in a lot of these movies.
Feel the Dickie.
Yeah. The spirit of Dickie.
Well, there was a fridge nearby. Where were they at in this shot? I don't even know, but like there was a fridge there. It was like a big walk-in freezer.
They don't even know.
It's like, oh, Hal Holbrook, come over here. I got something to show you in this freezer.
Look at these fucking waffle fries. Get in here.
You want to count how many tater wedges we got? I got a surprise for you in there too, motherfucker.
It's the lunch lady, bitch. I'll kill your ass.
It's Big Goldie, the lunch lady.
Goldie. You remember Goldie? I forgot about her.
Goldie, the lunch lady, had a big gold tooth.
I don't even know if that was her name, but everybody called her that. If it wasn't, she's probably mad at her now. Don't you call me Goldie. My name's Betty. You fucking prick kids.
Sleepaway Camp's plot. This came out before Sleepaway Camp. This was 1982.
Yeah, Sleepaway Camp was what, 83?
Yeah, Sleepaway Camp was like the next year.
Every movie, though, that came out around this time had to have an ending like that, though. It's some weird fuck, like Pat mentioned, Terror Train, Sleepaway Camp, this. Like one of them damn birthday movies, like they all had some crazy ass in.
Yeah, there was a lot of that for sure. But yeah, man, this, like, if you're nostalgic for those 80s slasher movies and you think you've seen them all, this is along the same lines. It feels like a lot of those movies. Girls Night Out, like, in my opinion, it gets a high recommendation for me. But at the same time, I know it's not really a great movie. But those early era slasher movies, I really did enjoy Girls Night Out quite a bit.
Yeah. I mean, of the two films that we'll talk about tonight, it was definitely the more enjoyable one. But they're both enjoyable in like a so awful they're good way, which is, I think, the only way you can enjoy the next movie on here. I don't think you could enjoy it any other way.
I don't know how you could enjoy it at all, but we'll talk about it. I mean,
so are you ready to get into Splatter University then?
Yeah, from 1984, right? Although,
yeah,
man, we'll talk about it.
Yeah, it was actually released, or I'm sorry, it was actually shot much earlier than that. So, yeah, Splatter University, which was a 1984 slasher film directed by Richard Haynes and actually put out and distributed by Troma Entertainment, is the story of a new sociology professor, Julie Parker. She begins her first teaching gig at St. Trinian's, a Catholic university in New York. There's a rumor among the students that Julie's classroom is cursed, as the teacher she replaced was murdered there. However, for some reason, they completely abandoned that plot pretty fucking quickly. But that's the original, like plot of the film. There's a whole opening scene where there's a mental patient that has schizophrenia that breaks out, stabs a victim. Here's the weird part. And I was like, this has got to be on purpose. Stabs the first victim in the dick and stabs the second victim right in the tit. And I'm like, damn, bulls.
I know. They get like within the first 5 minutes of the movie. Yeah.
And that's, I was like, this is going to be killer. And then nothing happens for about an hour. But in the beginning, you're like, wow, they're really going at it.
And this one starts off at an insane asylum too.
It also starts at an insane asylum, then goes to a university and
steak knives are used. Yep.
Yeah. And there's a priest character in the film, and he is a interesting dude for sure. Fucking this trailer gives away
pretty much. Well, I mean,
you ain't gonna watch this movie anyway. Trust me, you're not gonna want to.
They give it away really when you first see the killer, because like it's not hard to figure out the dude's got all black on.
That's true.
Got the same black shoes.
Yeah. There's a really cool like scene at the end of it though that we'll get into that might be the only like cool scene in the movie.
Interesting story though. Richard Haynes, the director of this, also did, was it Class of Nukem High? Was that the other trauma movie that he did?
I've actually got his autograph on Class of Nukem High stuff because like I wrote to him back in the day.
But he was one of those guys that sent us, and I've got it somewhere still, and signed him. There was only a couple of people that did this back in the autograph collecting days. Sent the full size 27x40 poster of Splatter University and signed it. Do you remember that?
Yeah. I've still got it somewhere. I don't know where. Really though, like he only did three notable films in his entire career. Splatter University, Class of Nukem High was next in 86. And then he did a movie called Head Games in 94. But like, I mean, nobody really knows anything about him other than that, as far as I can tell.
Well, he's a member of the underwear company family, right? The Haynes family.
Of course. Group. Yeah. Haynes with the dick holes in them.
This one though, man, looks like it's filmed exactly like the first Toxic Avenger movie. It looks like the same type of budget, same type of camera, and really fucking ugly people are in this movie throughout. Like that's the one thing that, I ain't got no room to talk about nobody, but when you see, you know that they're not people that are in movies, right? I don't know where they got these people at, but they're not actors. They're not even a lot of them couldn't even be models. They're just regular looking people with fucking like acne and, you know.
So interesting. There's a bunch of interesting things about this movie though, man. And the least of which is that like, as you can clearly tell, a lot of this was shot very quickly. Because there's scenes in it that I was noticing, like where the editing is like so bad that it it's almost like they just didn't have time. There's one scene where a guy's sitting like I'm sitting right here, right? They're in a lunchroom. He's sitting like this. And then the next scene, it's like a split second, next frame, is he's like up in a guy's face, like screaming at him. And then the next frame, he's like backseated completely like this. They don't, just like it goes, it jumps from one thing to the next.
Yeah. Frame. And they'll have months or weeks will go by with simply just like a text thing that says weeks later. Like that.
Yeah. Well,
why does that need to be weeks later anyway?
And it you makes no clearly, sense. Like, I don't know. Like, you can clearly tell that the where they were filming this at, like, was not a big, like, university or anything like that. It looks like our school back when we were like elementary school or something, all the rooms in it and stuff.
Oh, yeah. The walls and the old brick and everything. It looked exactly like Prestonsburg Elementary.
So here's the cool part about the movie. And, like, I was trying to figure out, why does this look so shitty? Because it does, man. Like, the way it's filmed looks shitty. The editing is bad. The acting is bad. You can tell the dialogue was, like, kind of made up.
The audio, like, you can't make out a lot of the time what the dialogue is in it.
So the original version of this film was shot in 1981. And then it was only about an hour long, so they had to go back, and they were like, we got to, like, make it an actual movie. It's got to be at least, like, 80 minutes, close to 80 minutes. And so the next year, they added an additional, like, 13 to 15 minutes of, like, footage to it.
To make so this it, what, filmed, 77 minutes long or something like that?
Like, 78 minutes, yeah. To make it seem, you know, like it's an actual, it's really not a movie. It's, no. I mean, it's kind of just a bunch of scenes and shit thrown together that don't make any sense.
The lead actress in this movie, I don't know if I wrote her name down or anything. She actually still acts, though. She has quite a bit of releases under her belt as an actress. So I think she's the only one, though. She was the one that was the new professor or whatever at the school. And something else that's interesting, too, and they never explain this, because this takes place within the first 5 minutes of the movie. You're talking about the guy that gets the dick stab. He's the first death.
Yeah.
That's the mental asylum. And then instantly the fucking guy gets out of the mental asylum and is at a university.
You're transported to that university, with, like, no, like, explanation.
Yeah, there's...
And then he stabs somebody in the titty.
Right. And then we fast forward to the next semester, and there's a new teacher and new students are there to get picked off.
So I could tell too, like, that they, something was going on too with just the way they shot this, because one of the lead characters of the film is the priest who's like the, I don't know, he's the dean of the school or whatever.
It's a Christian academy.
Yeah, almost all of his scenes are shot in the same fucking room in the same seat. Like, which you can tell they filmed all of it in a day. Like, there's no reason to do that. And it's just they'll change, like, positions in the same room, like from one side of the room to the other side of the room, and film, you know, it's the same freaking room.
And I'm glad that Vanderhoff brought this up, because I may have forgotten this, but I had this as another weird similarity, and I'll showcase it on here to see. Hopefully people, if you can see it on here. On the cover of this DVD is, you might be able to see her better from this angle. She's not in the movie. It's actress Elizabeth Caton, who would later go on to do Silent Night, Deadly Night 2 and one of the Friday the 13th movies. And she's featured on this artwork. I think the artwork's more famous than the movie.
I think the artwork is 100% the best thing, yeah.
She is not in this movie at all, but that is her on the cover. And she would later go on to do some pretty big horror movies. I thought that was kind of funny.
So, there's like 1,000 different red herrings in this movie, too, that they try to pull off with different characters and stuff. And I don't know why, but, like, one of my favorites is when the priest is, like, talking to her about something. I can't remember what it was. His legs start shaking, and he's like, oh, shit, hold on, I'm sorry about that. I got some sort of problem. Like, buddy.
Isn't there a scene, too? where they kick it. Is it when they kick him in the balls and he kind of like goes up to falsetto? He's like, oh, my balls. Yeah. Was he the character that did that? I can't remember.
I can't remember. I just, like, there's a lot of people in this movie that I couldn't tell you like who they were or anything like that either.
Forbes Riley is the actress. That was her name. Although I think she's credited as Francine Forbes in the movie. Has 82 acting credits on IMDb, so she's been at work a lot. Maybe Splatter University got her name out there, Uncle Bill.
Yeah, maybe. I doubt it. It's like I can't really describe to you like how bad this movie is. There's like a threshold that it crosses at some point from being like, you know, enjoyably bad to just like tediously fucking bad, where you're just watching a bunch of characters interchangeably come in from like to different scenes. I'd say this movie wastes about 30 minutes on classroom scenes with fucking kids trying to get out of writing a paper for sociology. Like, there's like, I'd say about 30 minutes where it's just her in there trying to like get these kids to write this paper and they don't want to. And it's like so pointless, man. You can tell they were just trying to feel.
Let me tell you something else that's annoying as shit about this movie too, is that fucking soundtrack. As soon as the movie starts, that shit starts, that shrieking and shit. Like, I don't know if they were going for like trying to do something along the lines of Psycho, but it just didn't work. I'm like, God damn, Bulls, what the fuck? And the funny thing is, there is a vinyl soundtrack of this movie out that you can purchase. I don't know who the hell would want to do that, because this is one of the most annoying soundtracks that I've ever heard. But it's out there on vinyl if anybody wants it.
I can't imagine who would want it. But to me, the only saving grace of this movie, aside from the very beginning, the first 5 minutes, is the very ending, which has a pretty cool like plot device in it when you figure out who the killer is and like what they've been using and shit like that. And of course it wraps up in the way that like you, like I said, like every movie made around this time had to have some sort of gimmick. And I don't know if we want to give the gimmick away, but like, I'll go ahead and give it away.
Go for it. Fuck it.
Cause I mean, you don't really need to see this.
No.
Yeah. So the priest is not really he's an escaped mental patient, and he's been like pretending to be the priest, and he's got like a crucifix that is the knife that he pulls, you know, the knife out of. And like, he's sitting there and he's got the crucifix hanging up on the wall. And then you see like blood coming down from it. And that's how they like kind of know that it's him. The really interesting thing though about this is that the lead character gets fucking murdered at the end of it, which I was not expecting either, to be honest.
Beyond Sour Grounds actually first mentioned that, so I want to give him credit so he don't get all butthurt that Elizabeth Catan was on the cover. I can't read these comments live. I always usually go back.
No, but so. We're not trying to keep up with all the comments.
But to be honest, I did have it wrote down here myself, so I was going to mention it, but we appreciate everybody.
Listen, there's a couple old sourpusses in this chat tonight. And I don't mind to tell you a bit. I'll ban the fuck out of you if you keep it up.
I'm going to pat these people on the back because they want recognition.
It's like, chill the fuck out.
Something that's interesting about this too, though, I was looking at my, because this is the only physical version of this that I'll ever own, is the DVD that Elite Entertainment did in 2004, I think, 2005. And this is one of the rare occurrences where, and you probably can't tell on here, but the artwork is starting to yellow. It's so fucking old. So I don't know.
Made on like a DeskJet printer or something anyway, I would say.
It's just the paper stock they used. But that's the first time that I can remember where the artwork is starting to yellow a little bit on there. So I thought that was kind of interesting, but... Dude, people can say what they want to, bitching about DVD quality and everything. For a movie like this, I mean, I don't have an OLED TV, so maybe it looks worse on an OLED TV, but a regular LED TV, this is fine. This movie's never going to look glorious anyway. So I'm good with this one on DVD.
Jamarl Jamarl says, where was Splatterfilm? I think it's New York. It was filmed partially at Mercy College, which is in New York. And the funny thing about that is Mercy University, Mercy College, they said they would give them like 2 weeks to film there, and then they, for some reason, had to cut it back to a week. So all of that shit that you see in the movie is filmed in like a week, which kind of makes sense as to why it looks the way that it does.
Rambo Ref says that he picks Girls Night Out of the two. Well, let's look on here and see what everybody else picked. Fucking do it. God damn it. I think Girls Night Out is, there's 69 votes and 111 people in here, so I don't know why there isn't more votes, but Girls Night Out is ahead 68% to 32%.
I'm honestly surprised like that it got 32%.
I am too, yeah. I didn't, like, it had been so long since I'd seen Splatter University that I was kind of willing to give it another chance. But from what I vaguely remembered from it, recollected, if you will, I was like, oh, yeah, this is not that great. But it was fun to check it out again. It's like slow in a lot of parts. It's very cheaply made. Technically, it's like, I don't know how Vinegar Syndrome may have remastered it, like the audio and everything, and made it look better and everything. But
to me, okay, like Splatter University, the only way you get enjoyment out of that movie is if you get like with a group of friends, you get drunk and you like watch it, make fun of it. There's no other way to like that movie, really. I mean, it's a goofy, I think the only way to enjoy it is ironically. So bad it was fun. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Girls Night Out. The Weapon is an original novelty. The Steak Knives and the Bear Suit and all that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, movies like this are fun to kind of dig out of the archives. And most of my DVDs and stuff I have like in a back storage being area, and luckily most of them are alphabetized, so it's pretty easy for me to find some of this stuff. And it gives me an excuse to go back there and fiddle dick around, you know. But yeah, it does look like Girls Night Out is the winner for this week. Now we get to talk about next week, Uncle Bill. It's gonna be a lot of fun. We'll get to those. But anybody also that's checking this out up in the Northeast, there is a show that we're going to be at coming up in October. Want to start promoting the hell out of this. It is the Buffalo Horror Garage Sale. We're going to be up there with Garrett. He's going to be hugging us like that the whole time. It's going to be huge.
Yeah.
And the tickets are available. Weekend passes are $20, not $2, $20 for the full weekend. And there's guests as well. Debbie Rashawn's going to be up there. I think William Ragsdale, Tom Savini, Michael Felcher's going to be up there too. So anybody in the Buffalo, New York area, that's going to be cool.
I'm looking forward to it a lot. Honestly, like I've never been anywhere near that area other than the time that we went to Baltimore. So
that's good. Niagara Falls too. I think I'm going to pee in Niagara Falls. That was one of my lifelong dreams to do that. But next week,
we got a super chat. Hold on.
Oh, okay.
Worst college slasher, Splatter University or Final Exam? God.
You know, I might surprise some people here. I think that I would say, I think Splatter University is slightly worse.
I do too. I think I could probably watch Final Exam easier than like
Splatter. We are probably going to have to rewatch Final Exam at some point on this show. I don't know when, but I don't know if we've ever reviewed Final Exam, but that's another one. Like it's set at a college and What is it with slasher movies? Like slasher movies in college, there's always a costume party. Like there's all the same shit in most of these.
I don't know. Like they had the same beats. I think they were all probably copying each other, honestly. Like just kind of stealing.
Tiffany Shepis does do shows. I think she does Scarefest every year.
I don't think she does as many though, man. She was like at every con there for a while.
Yeah. But anyway, next week it's kind of a themed show and kind of hinted at this on the show we did with Dirk on the MWO, the Italian slasher episode. We're going to be taking a look. Umberto Lenzi from 1975. Eyeball.
And then one of my personal favorites, always love this film, is 1981's Absurd by the legendary Joe D'Amato and starring George Eastman.
Huge.
Classic slasher film.
Very topical, too, because that just came out in 4K, or it's available to pre-order from Severin Films. And these are two that we have never, ever talked about together before. And it's an Italian special, boys. It's like an Italian, what do they call them, a BMT?
Bacon, meatball, and tomato?
Yeah.
Hey! How did that go on the set of those movies, you think? Be on the set of Eyeball? Like, how would that be?
Hey, the Italian meatball, it's a man.
I need some more fucking eyeball here. Come on.
We're making eyeballs. What the hell is here?
Don't come on my set, the eyeball, and talk shit.
This is Umberto Lenzi you're dealing with. Fuck are you?
Umberto Lenzi.
But that'll be fun. I mean, that kind of changes it up a little bit. You got a, what would you call that? Probably a proto slasher, maybe Eyeball, because that was in 1975.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fucking wild. It's a wild movie too that really lives up to its title, and I always liked it. It's kind of like a giallo, but Absurd to me is like, I guess their version of Halloween. It's fucking much more graphic than Halloween, though. Like some of the kills in it, I was like, Jesus Christ, dude, this is taking shit a little bit too far. And when you get to like the one of the plot devices at the end,
well, it is Joe D'Amato, so he didn't give a fuck.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's it. You know, we'll see if people like it or not. I'm curious.
This is sad, Rambo. I cried earlier today because, so like, I don't know why they did it this way. But Severin had it set up for their sale starts at 12:01 a.m. each morning. So it was on Saturday morning, they had the box set. On Sunday morning, they had like the Anthropophagus plushie and then the box and Anthropophagus and Absurd 4Ks and a couple other ones. So I didn't wake up until like the middle of the day today because it is a weekend and I like to relax and chew on a couple of gummies. And I saw, I was like, it was still in stock. So they've got tons of them, right? So I'm going to wait and see what Uncle Bill orders and everything and kind of order some other stuff because Severin does send us quite a bit of stuff to review and we'll probably get the other stuff. But then the fucking plushie sells out. And I think it was like earlier this evening, like 3 or 4 o'clock, it was sold out. So no, I fiddle-dicked around and didn't get the plushie. So if there's anybody out there that got one, an extra one, let me know. I would be interested.
I had to get it. I got it pretty much immediately when I woke up.
Did you get me one?
I thought you would have got one.
I should have. But anyway. Yeah. I take gummies throughout the day, Jackson.
That's literally the only thing I bought, too.
I'm getting ready to wake up. I'm getting ready to wake up. Yeah, give me another one of them gummies. Go back to sleep.
All fucking day. So for breakfast, you just have eggs and gummies.
I was thinking the plushie would be more than $25 in Mortal Nightmare. I got to be honest.
I was too.
Yeah. I thought it would be a little bit more because it sold for like $60 on eBay. I don't think I was up at midnight last night. I think I was already asleep. But if anybody has a plushie, an extra one, holler at you, boy. I also, before we get out of here, we got a package in, and I honestly, like, I thought it was something that I ordered, so I didn't even really look at it, but it was a package from our buddy Alpha Romero, and he sent us some shirts, Uncle Bill.
Uh-oh. I was wondering what this would be.
Showcase the artwork on here. The new Alpha Romero, George Romero shirt.
Oh, that's fucking killer.
It's hand drawing, boss. That's pretty cool, isn't it?
That's pretty amazing. Yeah. I wonder who did the drawing.
He sent us a letter with it. I don't know if it says. He sent us both stickers too. Wanna put that on her skateboards.
Hmm. I'd love to see me on a fucking skateboard. That'd be killing.
Huh? Nah, you break a hip or something. Said, hey guys, just wanted to say thank you for all that you do. Thank you for the support and inspiration over the last few years. It's been one of the most rewarding experiences in my life. And it never would have happened had I not found your guys' channel. I will forever be grateful for that. Keep kicking ass, guys. I'll always be watching and stay scared. Wonder where you got that from.
Hell yeah.
And P.S. he says, fuck Scream Factory.
I'm sure he wanted you to read that on here too. Fuck Scream Factory.
In their lights.
He did do a show. I was proud of him. He did a show last night about that Day of the Dead Scream Factory disc. And basically shit all over it, as he should, because that's awful.
You know what? I hated seeing people just defend. It's not that big of a deal. Come on. You're paying $50 for a fucking edited version of Day of the Dead. You paid the money.
Yeah. Tell you who does that, by the way, who says shit like that. Are people that don't really like love those films. And number two, they've already bought it and they just don't want to admit that they got ripped off. That's the only people that would say that, because like that is one of the lamest fucking versions of that film or any film like that I've ever seen.
You know, and I saw someone post that saying that it was censored audio was kind of misleading. No, it's fucking not, because the audio is censored. What is look up the definition of censored.
Yeah. I mean, it is completely censored through the fucking thing. Like, I don't know what they're talking about.
Right. And there's people out there that Scream Factory fucks up time and time and time again, and they'll always come to their defense. I don't know if it's a nostalgia thing or Scream Factory at one time was coming out with all this great stuff. But you can always rely on Dead Pit to be honest and tell you guys how it is, especially if it's Scream Factory, because, you know, we've kind of got a history with them. It's kind of our thing, right?
Yeah. I mean, we, for probably what, about 10 years now, have not been fans of Scream Factory whatsoever. So, I mean, it's not as if we are going to steer you in the direction of like everything has to be cool because they put it out. We've not liked them forever. So the truth of the matter is, like, when that Cliff McMillan left, that company really doesn't exist anymore. That was the only thing really keeping that going.
Right. And then the CRP group was credited as doing the artwork. And we might need to do a little bit more digging on them motherfuckers, because in my opinion, if a group is credited with doing the artwork and all that shit, that totally tells me it's AI. Come on now. There's not going to be multiple artists working on fucking pathetic looking piece of art, like that Day of the Dead artwork. Right. And unless the artist didn't want his name attached to it, right, that may have worked for the CRP group. That's possible, I guess. But they're not even, they don't even want to spend money for, to commission an artist to draw the, you know, a decent cover.
One of the strangest things, though, about this whole thing to me is that guy that came out and was like, I can't believe I have to talk about this fucking censored shit. I don't want to. Fuck whoever said it. Blah, blah, blah. And then he just kind of like left.
I think that guy probably lost it. I think that guy probably lost his job.
Probably lost his mind there for a second. He was just like,
there's a lot of other stuff that we have heard behind the scenes that we like, I totally believe, but that we really can't, I wouldn't say it without actually having the proof. But yeah, man, like Scream Factory is more than likely done completely.
To me, it's over, man. Because like Romero was saying last night, that was their last chance kind of to show everybody, okay, like we can compete with Arrow and Second Side and all these big companies and put out like a killer special edition. And they just fucked it up as much as you can fuck anything up, really. So I don't know how you just come back and you're like, oh, well, you know, we're really, the only way they could, it'd be if they offered replacement disc, and they're not going to do that. They're just not.
Well, they can't even afford to commission an artist to do the fucking cover. Do you think that they're going to put the money in to, because here's what's going to happen. Even if a lot of people didn't realize that it was altered or whatever, everybody that sees that they're offering a replacement disc is going to ask for it. Don't you agree?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
So when they do that, they're going to be out thousands and thousands of dollars, and that's why they have not mentioned it. They probably will never mention it, and they've got your money too late, right? Mm-hmm. Too late.
The whole thing is messed up. But anyway, that really has nothing to do with this show, but it's kind of a funny side note.
Yeah, for sure. But, yeah, guys, it's a fun show. But again, next week, it's the Italian Slasher episode. This one's going to be a lot of fun. Movies that we haven't talked about very much on here. Absurd and Eyeball. And give you guys, 6-day notice to get to watching them. I don't know if they're on Tubi or not, but I'm looking forward to this one.
I'd say that those two would be harder to find. I don't know, though. Tubi's got a lot of Italian stuff. So that would be the first place I would go to try to find those.
Very cool. And if you want to check out all the past episodes, like I said, they're all on YouTube. There's podcast versions. It's on Apple Podcasts and Spotify and all that stuff. And the commercial-free versions are on the Patreon page. We've got playlists and all that good shit. But until, what are we doing this week? We're doing The Dead Pit Is Watching this week? On Thursday?
We got to, yeah. We got way too much stuff.
Got a lot of stuff. A lot of stuff I still need to watch. But, all right, guys, we appreciate it. And we will catch you guys next time over at deadpit.com. A big thanks goes out to our supporters over at deadpit on Patreon.com. You can get hours upon hours of great content, right, Uncle Bill?
There's so many hours of content. We've got reviews. We've got songs. We've got live streams. We've got exclusive streams. We've got non-exclusive streams. We've got streams with all kinds of celebrities and all kinds of different old shows from the past podcast, the initial incarnation of the show. All of that can be yours.
Dead Pit on Patreon.com. Show us a little bit of love. Give us some money because we definitely deserve it. That Patreon page is so killer that you'll rub your bird to it on a nightly basis. It's that good.
You won't be able to contain yourself. You'll have to jerk your bird out and go crazy. I mean, that's how much content that we have. So much content that it's massive, and it will massively smack you in the face.
You'll play with your bird so much, pretty soon you'll be looking around for somebody else's bird to play.
Hey, everybody. Harriet, your favorite Filipino bitch. Miss Slatko Bird, tell you about
shop.deadpith.com. Simply the best horror shirts on TeePublic. There are others, but they all suck.
And it's the best goddamn deal on horror shirts you will ever see. New shirts, old shirts, all the in-between shirts. God damn it, fools. Go over to shop.deadpit.com. You ain't down with that. You can go to fuck hell.